Hello and welcome to DigiListen, a weekly podcast about digital service delivery for the voluntary sector. With the sudden impact of coronavirus, charities, community groups, social enterprises and voluntary organisations of all sizes are shifting their service delivery into digital and remote channels. We've been hosting online weekly chats with folks from all kinds of charities, experts and people on the front line about what they're learning and how charities can make use of digital to reach people more than ever before. I'm Ross McCulloch, Director of Third Sector Lab. This week we're talking about flexible technology and no-code tech. So joining me this week is Maddie Stark from SCVO.
Hello.
Hi, how are you doing, Maddie?
I'm good.
Good. So we've chosen the topic of no-code this week, so it's something that keeps coming up time and time again. So lots of charities don't have the budget for big builds, or often the leading time for big builds, and don't really know where to start, don't have that technical know-how in-house. So trying to take advantage of some of the more flexible platforms where you can use technology without the code. Now, I have to ask you, is this a topic that you have heard much about? Because I'm conscious it's new to lots of people.
No, I think it's maybe because of what it's called. So hearing a lot of the things that actually happened on the call and things that people were talking about and a lot of the topics, I think I do know what it is. But using that particular language of no-code technology, that for me is completely new.
Yeah. So it's become a bit of a catch-all term, but it's basically trying to describe platforms that provide a way to build web or mobile applications without writing code. So rather than you wanting to build, so it could be an app that sits on an app that you download on your mobile device, or it could be a tool or a platform online like a CRM, or it could be a system where say it's a live chatbot on your website, for example. Instead of writing code to build this stuff from scratch, you're using a platform that allows you to build it and deploy it, usually using some kind of drag and drop components, and you're essentially building that app or that platform simply by using that. So there's no need for that technical background. And what I would say, and I think this came out in the call, is what these platforms are starting to bring to light is actually a better understanding of users and user interface is actually more important than the technical know-how of building these things in the first place. And often that's the thing that's missing.
So effectively that could make it easier for a lot of people to access a lot of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And particularly actually, you know, when you look at some of the tools, the sheer simplicity of them. So I downloaded a tool this week, which was a bicycle repair app from my phone. It was literally about 99 pence in the Play Store. And I could probably find all the information that's on it if I went on YouTube and searched and went to various other places. But it's a single, easy-to-use app that will work whether I've got a signal or not. So I could use it if I'm out on a trail somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And it's really easily categorized and really clean. But there's nothing in it that I couldn't build without using a no-code platform. So I could literally use a no-code platform, probably on a subscription of about 25 quid a month. And I could literally build an app that could be deployed to the Play Store or iTunes. The other advantage you get with these tools is lots of times charities build an app, so they spend tens of thousands of pounds building it, they then deploy it, but then they have to spend a fortune every single year keeping this thing up to date so it will work on the latest iPhone or the latest Android device. That need for that constant iteration and constant updating is slightly removed when you're using a platform that has all of that built into it. So that's again another advantage you're getting from no code. Rather than me just kind of waffling on, it's maybe worth us hearing from Max Hanen, who's creator of 100 Days of No Code. And for me, he really, really succinctly explains what no code actually means and talks about some ways that it could help charities provide their services.
What actually is no code is probably a good place to start. So there are multiple definitions. So there's some from creating software without code to tools that make building websites, apps, and software simple, to the other end, which is tools that allow you to create technology solutions with no programming experience. So the bottom line from this is basically now anyone can build their own ideas and improve their existing processes, because no code is essentially democratized software creation. So it's sort of akin to when phones sort of gave rise to citizen journalists. Now we're probably seeing the dawn of citizen developers. So people like me and you, well, me, I've come from a very non-technical background and now I'm able to to build very cool things. So it's seeing the dawn of sort of democratizing access to everyone, which is exciting. And just to give you an example of the power that these tools have, just the other day, I saw a small business who couldn't afford to pay for Zoom every month, literally build a replica, obviously a watered down version, but a replica of Zoom for their own internal video conferencing software, which has saved them quite a lot of money since then. So that's just quite an interesting example that hopefully gives you a taste for actually, wow, that's quite an impressive thing to be able to do without any programming or coding experience. So now I'll just quickly go over some of the core concepts or principles behind no code and what it entails as you build with it. Firstly, the user interface builder. So basically it's drag and drop. So you can make websites and apps and even automate processes by simply dragging and dropping different components that you want on that page or site or app. So that may be a header or an image or even a chat function within the app, and you simply drag and drop it. And what comes down to you is obviously the visual layout and that sort of thing, but the actual sort of functional aspect of it, i.e. putting something that works on a page, is done for you, which I think is quite exciting and very intuitive, again, for people from completely non-technical backgrounds. And then the second concept, similarly to the drag and drop interface, is visual modeling. So or visual programming. So it's essentially you're making things work, but visually. So you're not writing any code, but you're connecting visual components together on a page, which makes it easier and more enjoyable to actually create things, at least from my personal experience. And then the third, I guess, like core principle of no code is reusability. So once you've made a component or you've added a component, you can reuse it and remix it. So there's sort of a quote, sort of fast development is great, but not developing a tool is even better. And once you've made something, you can just reuse it. And that is another really useful thing to have, especially for the speed of development in this space. And then lastly, just to come on to the last principle of no code, which is integration. So it's great you can hook up your apps that you make to other apps. And I think what will be touched on later is Zapier, which you can connect different apps to and with to create automations sort of add another layer of functionality to your apps. Those are sort of four things that I see as being key to no code, but that's by no means exhaustive, but hopefully that gives you a good understanding of its sort of identity and its principles behind it. In terms of what this all means, it basically means that you can now develop things at speed and with ease of use, which is great and saves you from having to learn to code, at least for what you'll be using it for. So that's given you hopefully a bit of context on the power of it, of no code and what it's about. But I guess what's really important, and I think will be touched on later, is how charities can apply it to leverage this technology for your organizations. And I've identified five ways no code can help charities. And again, this is by no means exhaustive, but something that I've come across in my experience. Firstly, I think it can be a great technology to digitize your service offering for a more diversified and inclusive service delivery. So now you can create almost disposable apps according to use case and websites and chatbots to integrate into your site or your service delivery to make it more accessible for more people. So Landbot is one where you can make easy chatbots to communicate maybe with your user base. And then another one is Glide, which is a app that is powered by spreadsheets, so Google Sheets, and you can again make disposable apps for your users for different use cases with it. And then lastly, cards.co, which is Another one great for making quick landing pages that you may need for specific events that you're running or something like that. But that's the first sort of use case I've identified. And then the next one would be probably the most important, which is automating your processes. So streamlining manual tasks like sharing content across your social media to sending new beneficiaries a personal email or adding their contact information to a spreadsheet. These things are all typically manual tasks, but with no code, they can be done in the background without you ever having to worry about them, which is obviously great. And what I would recommend you do as a charity is to almost get all your staff to work out all the manual processes that they're doing on a day-to-day basis, and then identify some of the things they're doing that can be automated with no code. And I'm sure from that you'll be able to save a hell of a lot of time, money, and actually will improve consistency of the work you're doing because it's automated and doing it in the background, sort of according to a strict set of instructions. So now I'll move on to the third use case of no code for charities, which is being able to evidence your impact more strongly through better data capture as a way to make more data-driven decisions, but also to represent the sort of great work that you're doing to funders. And you can do that using a couple of tools come to mind. There's one called Veyu, which allows you to visualize your data in charts and graphs very easily by uploading your data sets to it. And then the second one is Airtable, which you may have heard of because it's reasonably sort of mainstream now, but is another one that you can visualize your data from. So that is the third reason, the third way. Fourthly, marketing your services. I guess no code doesn't really get mentioned much in a marketing context, but there's some really good tools that you can use again to leverage this technology for your marketing of your service that you offer. And then lastly, I think it's a great way to modernize your image to be more attractive as an organization. I came across a quote recently that 75% of young donors are turned off by out-of-date websites. So that's quite an important consideration, I think. And you can make very visually sort of attractive websites with tools such as Webflow and also Card. So those are the five things I think no-code can really help charities with. I'm sure there are others. Hopefully that's giving you a bit more sort of excitement as to the potential that these tools have. And now I'll just move on to actually how you can now apply this sort of knowledge to your organization. So you know what use cases they have, but now you're probably thinking, well, how do I add that to my organization? So firstly, I'd recommend just reading these resources that I've put together. And there are five articles that will get you up to speed very quickly on the no-code space and landscape. And that is something that lots of other people have done before when they're starting out, is read these five. So I'd highly recommend doing that first. And then secondly, so the venture that I'm working on, we run a Tech for Good program, which connects no-coders with charities and other social impact organizations. And you can apply for help from these no-coders. Then there's the next thing you can do, as I'd probably say that the Tech for Good program is a little bit of a one-time fix, and is not necessarily a long-term solution for your charity if you really have serious intentions of embedding it in your organizations. So I'd always say you should invest in your staff and to maybe upskill them in this technology. And I guess that just sort of goes back to that whole give a man a fish sort of quote. And I guess that brings me on to what I'm doing, which is 100 Days of No Code, which is basically a program that helps people learn to no code in 100 days. And be very happy to talk to anyone that's interested in maybe going through that program and reaping the rewards that no code could give.
So some really useful tips there from Max. We've got the links to those in the show notes. One of the things people struggle with is where to start with the tools that Max has described, and just particularly that notion that you're not going to break the internet. So trying something in a sandbox environment before you deploy it, and building that culture of exploration and experimentation within your team, and just simply giving these tools a go. With most of them we're describing, they will have some kind of free level or a trial basis, so you can try some of the stuff without having to commit big financial commitments or even big time commitments.
Can I just ask you, Ross, just for kind of clarity for folk who maybe don't know as well, what is a sandbox environment? What is that?
Yeah, so a sandbox environment is really just being able to play. So you'll be able to build the app and tweak it without actually making the app available on your website or being able to make it downloadable from the Play Store, for example.
Okay.
So all we're talking about is almost a test environment would be the simplest way to think about it.
Thank you.
But yeah, that's a good question, yeah. So the next person we had up on the call was Ian Delworth from The Lens, and he talked us through a really simple deployment that they've been using that's made a huge difference using Zapier, which is a tool that I've often seen described as the kind of glue of the internet that allows different platforms to talk to each other. And that's helped them pivot their business model during COVID-19 restrictions.
The Lens is all about delivering innovation through entrepreneurship. And what does entrepreneurship mean? It's where frontline staff have the skills, confidence, permission to act like an entrepreneur inside their organisation. So I just kind of want to provide a bit of context now, just to kind of explain why we started using Zapier and how we plan to use it. We went from pre-crisis delivering 18-month-long culture change programmes. They're all based face-to-face delivery. We would go in and work with large organisations like Alzheimer's Scotland, Loretto Care, Children's Hospice across Scotland, and deliver lots and lots of workshops, talk to lots of staff all across the organisation at all different levels. Obviously, crisis happens, totally changed. None of that was not a viable business model anymore. So we had to rapidly shift, and within the space of a week, we launched 3 new services. And that was aimed at the public and third sector, trying to help them respond. All about developing new ideas. Lots of people were scrabbling around, like we were, trying to figure out what do we do and how do we kind of help the people that we're meant to be supporting. So we launched Power Hours, which is kind of one-on-one support sessions, learning groups, where we got together kind of cohort of people to work on a specific problem. But then we also launched our Lens Labs. Those are 90-minute workshops, free to attend, and on a kind of variety of different topics. This actually proved really, really popular. We had lots of them were sold out. And now what we're doing is we're kind of starting to shift away from responding to the crisis and now starting to think about how is our business model changed from now on. We're seeing this as a key marketing tool. We've actually generated a number of leads for paid business as a result of it, because we operate as we're a registered charity, but we're a social enterprise. So we've got a kind of variety of different ones. We've got resilience in times of change, we've got storytelling for influence, creative problem solving. And what one of the hallmarks of our facilitation is that we send a visual record at the end of every workshop, whether that's face-to-face or digital. And that's just a summary of the learning, some of the slides, some of the kind of key points that the facilitator has gone through. So all of our developers who deliver our training, they would just send it on afterwards. But what we are now doing is we've integrated Eventbrite with MailerLite, which is our MailChimp version. It's like a email marketing platform, using Zapier. I've got a lovely graphic that kind of shows you all this, but I'll send a link to this. What the integration does in Zapier is connect the attendees. So once you've attended the workshop, you basically join a mailing list on the MailerLite. What I've then built in is whenever someone joins that mailing list and they've got a particular tag, so storytelling for influence or resilience in times of change, they then get automatically sent an email, a nicely designed email, and it links to the visual record that they can download. So why do this? Kind of 4 reasons, really. It saves time and money. There is roughly, I think I've calculated, it's about 4 days worth of work over the course of a year with the number of labs that we're doing. But that's just one specific lab. Once we start, we're going to be delivering lots of training over the course of the next year, hopefully. So that's a lot of time and a lot of money that we can be spent elsewhere. It also improves the user experience and is a consistent user experience. So we've got four developers, they'll all send slightly different emails, they'll be slightly formatted, they'll send it at different times, but consistency is really important for the user experience and our brand reputation. So those are the kind of main reasons that we're doing it. What we're planning on doing next, and that's quite a simple, quite straightforward one. I'm on and off furlough, so once I've got a bit more time, we're going to do something a bit more complex. So we've got the basic kind of premise of marketing is around getting the right message to the right person at the right time. We've got specific questions when you buy a ticket on Eventbrite. So what sector are you from? Are you public, private or thirds? How would you describe your role? Frontline, middle manager, senior leader? So there's nine types of people that we can come along to our Eventbrite. So what we'll be doing is then you can match up the specific questions to your Eventbrite, to your MailChimp or MailerLite list. And then what you can do is then create rules as a result of those. So those that so everyone will get the visual record, but then a week later, if you are a senior leader in a public sector organisation, you will get your own email. If you're frontline staff in a private sector organisation, you'll get your own email. If you're a middle manager in a third sector, you'll get your own email. You kind of get the gist. The point is that allows me to, one, sell them a specific product. So if you're attending storytelling, we do an open course for storytelling. We do, you can buy it for your teams or you can buy it for your senior leaders. We do ideation workshops. We do lots of different things. So I can be very specific and very targeted in what I'm trying to upsell from that free service. I can change the language. Private sector talk very, very different to the third sector, as we all know. And so on. So there's lots of little variations. There's nine emails that we'll be doing. And that is just really going to help us up our game in marketing, because we've moved from that big 18-month culture change program that we've talked to senior leaders and they're the ones who purchase it. Now we've got frontline staff like yourselves, anyone basically can come along and purchase something from the lens and help in their entrepreneurship journey.
A fascinating insight there. Sometimes it's not about overcomplicating these things. I think we talk about that all the time. Keep it simple as much as possible. And if you know what you want to do, but you know it's going to be a massive time sink, just get thinking about how you could automate some of those processes. So if you know it's going to take you a really long time to do it, then actually it's worth thinking back and thinking, okay, which part of these processes can we automate as opposed to having to do the whole thing all at once?
Yeah.
And that was a really good real world example of how to go about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next up is Lizzie Warble, head of digital at SueRider. Here she talks us through how SueRider used no-code solutions to help them process data efficiently when making changes around GDPR compliance.
I'm Lizzie Robel. I'm the head of digital at SueRider. For those of you who don't know what SueRider do, we provide palliative, neurological and bereavement support. So we have seven hospices and palliative care centres and four neurological care centres. And we also provide bereavement support face-to-face through our centres, but also now we have a number of online services as well. We have an online bereavement community and we have a newish service where we offer people up to six sessions of counselling with a qualified counsellor to help them deal with their grief and their bereavement. So that's kind of SueRider in a nutshell. My example is quite similar to Ian's, really. So around 3 years ago, when we were starting to realise what GDPR was going to mean for our mailing lists, we needed a new way of getting data and building our supporter mailing lists. And our best supporters are our warm supporters, and those are people who come in to our centres and into our services. So what we wanted to do was set up a way of capturing that data and capturing people's email addresses so that we could send them on some kind of fairly generic journey and then drop them at the end of that into our general mailing lists and start to build up sending our regular comms to them. So we used to have paper sign-in books in our centres. So when you go in and visit someone at reception, you fill out your name, you say who you're visiting, you say what time you arrived and what time you left. And we replaced those with iPads. What we couldn't do was, MailChimp is our email broadcast system that we use, and there wasn't a form that we could reasonably use from that. in a format on an iPad that meant people wouldn't be able to just then generally get on the internet or come out of the app or anything, and you know, and all of that kind of thing. So we needed a visitor sign-in app specifically. We piloted with one called Envoy, and we ended up using one called TeamGo, but I think we might go back to Envoy now because it's much better than it used to be. But we needed then something to sit in between the visitor sign-in app and MailChimp, and that was Zapier. So Zapier sits exactly in the middle of those two. And the process is that if someone comes into the hospice, they fill out the on the iPad, they fill their information out. They can choose to leave their email address. They don't have to. But if they do leave their email address, what happens is then all of the form submissions are sent to Zapier. Zapier will then filter out all of the ones where people have left an email address. And then that information is pushed through to the relevant hospice mailing list in MailChimp. And I think it's within about 10 or 15 minutes of someone signing in, they will then get the first email, which is a kind of welcome from the centre director and outlining what services it is that we offer and whether we can be any more help. We wanted something that was going to be instant. Comes back to Ian's points again. It's quite easy to set up forms that people can fill out, but then if there's a massive manual effort for that, and we probably in a month in one of our centres maybe have around 800 to 1,000 visitors, so it's a massive amount of data to be kind of dealing with, and we wanted it to be timely and for people to start receiving that contact from us in a timely fashion, which was one of the main benefits from it really. And it's worked really very well. I think, like Ian, we're not using it in a particularly sophisticated way, but it's doing the job. And if anything ever falls over, never tends to fall over on the Zap side, it tends to fall over from the app side or the MailChimp side. We get alerts straight away when something's not looking right. And I'm a head of digital, but I'm one of those not hugely technical heads of digital. I come from more of a comms background, and I didn't set it up, but I can now kind of find my way around it. You can look at how the other ones were set up, try and kind of troubleshoot and work out what's broken, what doesn't look like the other one that's still working, kind of thing. Yeah, it's been great for us. It's been really good. It was not quite a lot of effort to set up. It was more effort across the whole process as a whole, which is a whole different session. But you kind of set it up and then that's it. It just kind of ticks along and works in the background, and you almost forget that it's there doing a job until one of the other apps isn't doing their job and we get an alert come through.
That was great to hear from Lizzie there about those tools that help them connect with their service users. So converting visitors to a physical space to supporters, and then to be able to follow up on that. So it's nice when thinking about these tools to identify real sticking points in your organisation. I think she really got that across. So what are the things that everyone hates doing? Finding off-the-shelf solutions that allow you to do those things more easily. And for a lot of organisations, that's going to be sometimes very unsexy, clunky back-end processes that staff and volunteers hate. So things like your travel expenses or toil or holidays, how do you make that much, much more simple a process for people? And so our final speaker was Russell Finlay from Speakers Trust, and a senior leader who's talking really confidently about using flexible technology and it just being a normal thing for that organisation to do.
Probably the first and most important thing is that if you can mail merge, or anybody in your team can use mail merge, then you can use all the tools that have been mentioned so far. And it gives you the power to do so much more than you've been able to do just with that. It also means all of the headaches of mail merge, like the Excel export and all of that stuff, disappears. The first time I came across Zapier was when I had a problem, which I think a number of nonprofits will have, is we had spent £50,000 on a legacy system before I joined, had £15,000 of support costs a year. That did a job that was really good, a repetitive job of sending invoices from that system into QuickBooks and managing our finances. The system couldn't be expanded or developed without that developer doing more work. And that really, really frustrated me. So the first time I found Zapier was when I was really angry, trying to work out why Salesforce couldn't just talk to QuickBooks. And then what I discovered was not only could it do that, but we didn't have to buy any system. We didn't have to make a choice that was there forever. And we knew our ongoing costs. We knew our ongoing costs would always be structured about the amount of work we did. So we had Salesforce, like a lot of nonprofits will have, because the licenses are free. And we had QuickBooks, which again is a cheap accounting system. We needed those two things to talk to each other because we run 1,500 workshops a year, and we run about 60 events with speakers, VIPs, audience members, etc. And one of the key things was managing all of those processes. The one I was frustrated by was how we could invoice our clients and how we could receive invoices from our trainers. That meant we had no manual handling of any invoices. What I liked about Zapier and the way that worked is it fitted with everything that's in my IT philosophy, which is we have no IT department, we have no IT staff, we have no system purchases, we use no code, and we empower the team to use off-the-shelf software as much as we possibly can, so we get the most out of that. You've had it explained already in a way, but all Zapier does is talk to one system, ask it a bunch of questions about the information it holds, and tell that a different system that information. So for us, our program staff could set up an invoice for a workshop, or our trainers external to the organization could fill in a simple form and send an invoice through. The key data is held, transferred into QuickBooks, and authorized on the spot. So it made those two systems talk together. That saved us a ton of money. It also saved us in the entire process. What we use end-to-end in that is a form system called FormTitan, which is really cool if you have Salesforce, because it can suck in information from Salesforce as well as sending it out. So you create bespoke forms for every single customer or account or whatever you have. Then we went into Salesforce, sent it straight to QuickBooks. That was one of our challenges. But what that opened out was because of Zapier, and it's connected to like 2,000 different apps, we could start looking at every other aspect of where we have processes that need one system to talk to another. And when we say system, email is the most important system that we have. So Microsoft Outlook. So rather than sending stuff from Salesforce, which could get blocked within people's filters or goes from the account of the person logged in, we can create an account that most of our mail goes from. And that came into its own when we had to set up, as I think Ian was talking about, a whole range of digital processes to take our work online. And the really important bit is we had no idea what those processes were when we started building them. We had an idea of what our online event would be, but what we hadn't worked out was, what are all the interactions along the way with every school, every parent, every student that we work with, every person who's going to attend it? But what Zapier meant we could do was stitch that together in real time to make sure we could deliver. So we use a number of systems to bring that together. First of all, the things we've already got. And I think my advice would always be start with what you're using, start with what you've got. So entry through into a form that connects a record in Airtable, which is basically spreadsheet on steroids. If you're not already using Google Sheets, Airtable is a far better way to manage your data than that. That would then take people through a series of automated emails. So all my team needed to do was tick a checkbox in that database as and when people move through that process. That would send them the right email at the right time. One of the hassles for us was we had Zoom that we needed to use for people to attend meetings and or webinars. And we, for safeguarding reasons, needed to take people through quite a rigmarole of getting on there. Being able to import every Zoom event you set up automatically through Zapier into your database so you can send out personalized emails with the right link to the right people was really, really useful. The other highlight was we do communication skills, public speaking. So entering is actually sending a really large file to us. What we discovered was Dropbox, brilliant system to be able to request files. So there's a URL you can upload as big a file as you want. But what we also had was Dropbox can be connected into Airtable via Zapier. So all of those files had their Dropbox linked associated with the person who'd sent it immediately. So within a few weeks, without actually knowing the processes up front, we were able to stitch together every piece of software we wanted to use in a process which was managing the communications through that time for students and others. And I think that is one, and it sort of touches on what a couple of people have said before, but the agility to change. So Lizzie talked about changing providers of each piece of it. If you are using different systems that you may find something else works better, then having a tool like Zapier, and there are a couple of others, that can integrate from anything to anything, means that you're not wedded to each system, which means you can change your mind. It means that you can have different people supporting over time, and it means you have no expensive upfront cost. So that's our experience.
So any thoughts from you, Maddie, then, just to kind of round up around no code and flexible technology? Anything that you think charities should be doing next?
I think maybe go and find out and see what other charities have done. Again, we talk about that quite a lot. From what Russell was saying, it's not rocket science. There's a lot of these things that are out there. It's maybe just around language. If we don't know what no code or flexible technology means, then we won't necessarily understand that that's available to us and what we can do. So it is maybe using things and actually thinking, okay, what is this? What do I need?
Yeah.
Has somebody else done this? So talking to other charities, and then back to that point around actually, do we need to do the whole thing, or can we break it down into manageable chunks?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things that I think came out of this discussion was that need for a better understanding of UX and about how people actually use some of these tools. Because it's very easy to jump in and just start building an app or a CRM, for example. But if you don't really understand how people are going to use these and what makes them tick, and what that user interface needs to look like, and simple things like how many steps do I need to get before I submit my travel expenses in this system that you've built through a drag and drop backend, is without that stuff, actually you might end up building a tool that isn't fit for purpose. It might look really nice and it technically works, but you've not really understand how that user's going to be using it. So there's some of the speakers talked about some recommended further reading, and we'll hopefully have some of that stuff in the show notes. But simple books like things like Steve Krug, his book is Rocket Surgery Made Easy, which is a really, really simple user testing book. So that's one that I would recommend starting on, but there's tons of good ones out there. So hopefully today's call has helped you think about how you could use no-code technology and other forms of flexible technology like Zapier to deliver or improve your services. Don't forget that on the SCVO website, we've got a full range of resources on using flexible technology. And on the Third Sector Lab website is also the big Google document, which has got some of these examples and case studies all gathered up in there if you hit the COVID-19 button. And so that's all we've got time for this week. The podcast will be back, and we will be hearing from Ivana Bartoletti talking about tech privacy and ethics, which is going to be a really interesting one. You'll find more podcasts in this series on iTunes, Spotify, and all the other usual platforms. Do please subscribe. You can review us on there as well. Maddie, do you want to tell everyone what your Twitter username is, and people can ask you any questions on there?
Twitter is @StarkMadeleine.
Yep, and you can get the rest of the DigiScot team and @DigiScot. And you can also harass me shamelessly on Twitter about any of the questions about flexible technology and no-code @ThirdSectorLab. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye!
Thanks very much to everybody who made this podcast happen. First of all, the charities who joined us on the call and shared all their wisdom. Secondly, Tech for Good Live podcast crew who brought it all together. And finally, we're part of The Catalyst, which is a UK-wide network supporting charities to make better use of digital.